From WNYC New York Public Radio, I'm Leonard Lopate. This is just one segment of the Leonard Lopate Show, but every interview is available on demand at WNYC.org. This on-demand service is made possible by WNYC and its listeners, so please help support this free service by becoming a member at WNYC.org.
WNYC On Demand is supported by Open, how American Express serves small business. Open offers a range of products and services designed exclusively for small business. Details at 888-779-OPEN or open.com.
Gregory Davis is the firstborn son of Miles Davis, the great trumpeter, composer, and band leader. Gregory's memoir, Dark Magus, The Jekyll and Hyde Life of Miles Davis, chronicles his childhood memories of his loving but often tumultuous relationship with his father. It's published by Backbeat Books, and I'm pleased it has brought Gregory Davis to my show today. Hello.
Hello. How are you?
I'm well. There have been
holidays to everyone.
There have been several biographies written about your father, including the one that he collaborated on with Quincy Troupe. Do you think they all miss some things?
Of course. Never had a, from my view, from someone that lived and walked by his side, you know, someone that lived with him and walked by his side and cry with him and laugh with him and knew the little intricacies of his personality, like I did. I mean, I started traveling with my father when I was like 10 years old, and taking me on gigs with him, you know, so.
That must have been an education of a sort that few kids have and maybe many wouldn't want to have.
I think it was a synergy, like I gave him energy and he gave me energy.
You have a master's in psychology. Do you think that's helped you gain a better understanding of your father?
Yes, it has. He needed to cathex his energies when he wasn't performing or he wasn't creating music. And that was the problem. Some, you know, just the same as some athletes or great musicians like Mozart and Beethoven had problems. And then in this modern world, it's even 10 times more... Ten times more deeper than what they had because of all the technology and everything that's going on now.
You play trumpet as well. Do you think that gives you any insights into what drove your father?
Yes.
He taught you how to play, didn't he?
Yes, and he still teaches. I'm still learning from him.
By listening to the music?
Listening to the music, yeah, and I'm him at times because we have the same blood and the same genes, so I can dream and I can get bits and pieces. Nobody else can do that.
Why did you call your book Dark Magus? Obviously, you weren't making reference to the Magus as a member of the Zoroastrian priestly caste or the three magi. You were talking about the sorcerer version of the word Magus?
I didn't name the book Magus. The publisher did it, but I've come to recognize it as someone who had great powers, and secretive powers also, but not a magician in that sense of the word, but someone who had great powers and also secretive powers, because he did.
And then the subtitle is The Jekyll and Hyde Life of Miles Davis. So you're suggesting that there was both good and evil in the man.
Well, yes, to a certain extent. Not so much evil, but just a twisted personality at times.
Was that something you were aware of when you were very young? When did you start realizing this?
Later on, after he became Miles Davis and he started reading his own press, so to speak, you know. And then he started acting out and got him in trouble. And I recognized it as a Mr. Hyde personality because it included cocaine. And, you know, cocaine has a way of changing a person's character. And then when you have people that are around you that are using it also, so you know, it's just a thing that you have to harness in, but, you know, you can't really do it because you're always searching for that first high.
But before there was cocaine, there was heroin. You were born before he had his heroin habit, weren't you?
I was born before that.
When did he marry your mother?
They were high school boyfriend and girlfriend. They were high school lovers.
So before he came to New York, he had his children with your mother?
Yes. Yes, he already had, they already had children before he came to New York.
And it was only when he came here and he started working with Charlie Parker that he developed the heroin problem.
Yeah, he wanted to blend in and he just wanted to be part of the group and got stuck. He never wanted that as a lifestyle.
Well, you're right that his relationship with Bird had the best and worst influence on him.
Yeah, because he admired Bird and looked up to him. And like I said, he never wanted it as a lifestyle. He just tried to blend in and be accepted, you know, by these giants that he thought in his mind were giants. And he went to Juilliard, he did everything that they required of him in Juilliard, but he wasn't getting what he wanted as far as the new music called bebop. And so he had to go find Bird and Dizzy and get that. But Dizzy never used drugs, you know, but he emulated Charlie Parker so much that he wanted to be blend in and be part of the group. I keep saying that because...
And then people who worked with him did the same thing?
He's like a kid, you know, in a candy store. And just, let me try this, and maybe if I try this. But he got stuck for a while, and then he never wanted it as a lifestyle. He jumped out of it as soon as he saw his negativity. Because his family was very respected. He came from he had principles and morals. His grandfather, my grandfather, had brothers and sisters that all went to college. My great great grandfather was a man that was an accountant, and
his father was a successful dentist.
Right. So
his father bought him a trumpet when he was 13, but his mother didn't want him to play it. Why?
Well, my grandmother was kind of like a church-going lady and, you know, just get your education and don't worry about those blues and that music, you know, and that nightlife and that kind of stuff. She thought that he would get stuck. I mean, he did. He did, but like I said, he jumped out of it. She would have loved it if he maybe play violin or something like that. But my grandfather, he's a gentleman and also an educator and great man in his own right. And he said, well, my son, if he wants a trumpet, I'll see about it. I don't think it'll hurt.
So Miles married your mother before he came to New York. Then he came here, and after a short time at Juilliard, he winds up playing with Charlie Parker, probably the most important musician of his time. That's like starting at the top. When did he bring you and the rest of the family to New York?
Well, he played with Charlie Parker and Coleman Hawkins. He played with everybody who wanted him because they saw a star. They saw a young man that was, a fruit and like a flower that, you know, that they had to, you know, these men took him under their wing, so to speak. Charlie Parker and all these great people that he played with, you know, all these great men that were established, Dizzy Gillespie, Coleman Hawkins, they all took him under their wing, you know.
And then he brought the family to New York?
My mother, we were in Jamaica, Queens, at first, as I can recall. We had a house there. Billie Holiday was in the neighborhood, and we used to take a bicycle. I think at that time you could rent a bike. I was so young. He'd put me on the back of the bike, and we'd go over Billie Holiday's house. And as you know, Billie Holiday had no children, and she loved, she just, you know, set me on her lap and and she wanted me to stay longer, you know. Don't take him, Miles, let him stay.
In fact, that must have, you met an awful lot of people who turn out to be among the most important in jazz history, and some pretty big celebrities as well when you were very young. Did you have any idea?
Any idea of what?
Just how important. Well, you know, Billie Holly was that nice lady. Is that the way you saw her?
My father always looked up to her, and she was a nice person. I mean, as I remember, as a young child, you know, I don't know any more details other than that. I don't know anything about her drug habit or anything like that. But
no, I mean, you weren't aware of just how famous she was, and how
I wasn't aware of how famous my father was. I didn't know he was a celebrity until celebrities started coming over the house, you know?
People who you've known from television or elsewhere.
Yeah, Muhammad Ali on the telephone, Sammy Davis Jr., Diane Carroll used to live in the same building, 881 10th Avenue, when he had that building, apartment on 10th Avenue, and Bill Evans, and everybody. He had a grand piano there. He used to come and rehearse. And Diane Carroll had, an apartment on the same floor or the next floor above.
My guest is Gregory Davis, who's written with the help of Les Sussman, Dark Magus, The Jekyll and Hyde Life of Miles Davis, his father, has a foreword by Clark Terry, and it is published by Backbeat Books. Clark Terry, another major influence on your father. In fact, they come from the same hometown, East St. Louis, don't they?
Right. First of all, I'd like to give a thank you to Les Sussman, great writer. And my co-writer, yeah, Clark is another one that took my father under his wings, and did me a great honor by putting a forward to this book, and is also now an existing icon of music.
One of the great giants. Yeah,
great giant. Only trumpet player I've seen play the trumpet upside down, flugelhorn and everything. down.
How old were you when your parents broke up? You wound up living with your father, didn't you?
Yes. My father was, at that time, was a great provider for his family. He used to buy our clothes out of Saks Fifth Avenue, and he had a home there on 312 West 77th Street that he got the money from that incident in front of Birdland, that lawsuit, and he won a substantial settlement, and he went and bought a home for his family. He was a great father.
The lawsuit came out of a racist situation. He was accused of being a racist. That was when a cop hit him. But he was accused of being a racist over the years. And yet, you mentioned Bill Evans, who played with him, was a friend, and there was an awful lot of other white musicians who played in your father's groups over the years. Why did he have that reputation?
I don't know. I really don't know, because, like you said that the everything correct. He didn't care if you were green. He once stated, you know, if you could play music, and he wanted him in his band, he would go after the guy that had the sound that he wanted, and he didn't care what color he was. And you know, Gil Evans, Bill Evans,
Dave Holland,
you know,
a whole
you name
bunch
it.
Of guitarists.
Yeah, you didn't care about color. Color was not the outside world really put that stigma on him. He was not a racist at all.
What about his reputation as a misogynist?
Well, he could get like that, you know, and especially when he had drugs. He could get like, you know, kind of really bitter towards women. On the other side, he would give them gifts and everything. I've seen him, I mean, give diamond bracelets and everything, you know.
So, I guess what happened is more often than not, he would say things that people would get upset about. And then I think I heard somewhere that he knocked Cicely Tyson around, I imagine.
I've never seen him. I've never seen him do that.
He taught you how to play trumpet, you said. You want to become that would be a heavy burden to try to become a trumpet player like Miles Davis. Have you ever thought about what it must be like for Robbie Coltrane?
Well, I don't look at it that way. That's like I said again. That's the outside people. I love the trumpet as an instrument, as a well crafted instrument. Just like you love, if you take a horse or a thoroughbred horse or a Ferrari, and then I'm interested in music, and I've been messing with the trumpet or learning the trumpet for years. You know, for years. Not because he plays trumpet, but because this is what I'm interested in. But he gave, you know, he really didn't sit down with me and instruct me on playing the trumpet. Like, he gave me bits and pieces. At the time, he didn't have the time to do that. And he wanted to see how far I would take it. He thought maybe he'd throw it away, give it up, you know, because it's a lot of labor intensive. And it's very physical, and you have to practice every day. It's like the violin. And you have to learn patterns and scales and much involved. You know.
Well, your father also tried painting. In fact, he painted a number of album covers. He, when he was on in years, he started acting, appeared on an episode of Miami Vice. He was in Scrooge with Bill Murray. So he was, and he started being friends with rock stars, obviously open to a lot of things. You became his bodyguard, his nurse, his manager, were there during some of the really rough times, but you were separated from him when he died in 1991. What had happened?
Well, first of all, my father was a social movement. He was a social movement, and his music was so strong, and he was in so many paradigms of music, and he changed the music, not for music change for sake, and he changed the sound of the trumpet. After Satchmo, Louis Armstrong, he was in the hospital for 2 months, I think it is, and then they called me at the last minute, 3 days, and then he was gone, and he requested that he see his son before he died, and I don't like the fact that they kept this from a dying man. His dying wishes was to see his son before he died.
And then you found out you were left out of his will. You and your brother were left out of his will.
Yeah, I mean, well, what father is not angry at a son at times? But he was like a chameleon. He'd love you today. Maybe he would dislike you tomorrow. But he wouldn't do anything like that. He expected the people around him to do the right thing. And they had their own self-interest that was paramount in their minds.
Well, obviously, something has happened. You were able to come to some settlement about your father's estate. Did have to go to the courts?
Of course, we still may have to go to court, but I'm doing my own thing. I'm not bitter. They are the ones that should be bitter, because the repercussions of what they've done is going to haunt them all their life, and even after they're gone from here. Because it's I'm not one that breaks up family. I put it that way. I'm the one that wants to unite family. You know, who doesn't hate their sister? You know.
At times,
you know.
Well, the book by Gregory Davis, with the help of Les Sussman, with a foreword by Clark Terry, is called Dark Magus, The Jekyll and Hyde Life of Miles Davis. It is published by Backbeat Books. And let's go out with little Miles. Thank you so much for being with us, Gregory.
Thank you.
Thanks for listening to the Leonard Lopate Show from WNYC, New York Public Radio. You can hear everything we do and check out our other programs on demand at WNYC.org or on iTunes. This on-demand service is made possible by WNYC and its listeners, so please help support this free service by becoming a member at WNYC.org. And thanks.